All right, I want to welcome everyone to the Building Fires podcast. I'm Corey McCain, your co-host, CEO of WeStrive.
I'm Farhad Jamayan, the CEO of Canna.
Boom. So every week we interview some of the coolest entrepreneurs on the planet. They've had billion-dollar exits, absolutely killing it, and we figure out how they did it, why they did it, and we try and get tips for everyone on how to really grow a company.
Absolutely. Totally unscripted, casual conversations where we get to, you know, that real deep dive view of exactly what went down, but a lot of fun, really great. Tune in.
Building Fires.
Right on. Well, today on the pod, we had the Garrett Scott, our really good friend and fellow OKC founder that's building the future of delivery underground with his company Pipe Dream.
Yeah, Pipe Dream is amazing. When I first met him, like I mentioned in the episode, I didn't know they were legitimately building, you know, the ability to transport goods in tunnels. I mean, so what they're doing is, it is what they're doing. Like, it's an incredible idea. I think they're going to absolutely change the landscape of transportation and delivery. And I'm just excited to see where they go. But it was an awesome episode, so we're happy to have him on.
Absolutely. And here's kicking it off with Garrett Scott, founder of Pipe Dream.
Corey, is this what this is going to be? Because I'm here for it.
I got tons of deer and fawn puns. I also have dope puns too. I have dope puns, if you will. Thank you.
How do I exit out of this podcast?
There's a little red button in the top left, and then Garrett and I can have a good conversation.
Okay.
Garrett, so like, you know, what the fuck do you do, dude?
Yeah, so I run a startup called Pipe Dream.
Okay. what are you doing, Corey?
what is your startup do?
All right, wait. Let's run it back. Let's start from the start.
Yeah, are we in it? Are we jumping in?
Yeah, he's just recording, but
I already said let's go, dude. It's too
right
late.
On.
Yeah.
Can't go back.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
No, we're already here. So what does your startup do? Boom.
Yeah, so we build a underground logistics system. So our goal is to build the fastest shipping network this side of teleportation.
Wow. That is a super awesome way to that little like slogan at the end is amazing. Wow, I like that.
Hashtag team pipe dream. We out here.
So when I first saw your startup on Twitter, when I think Farage either introed us or like tagged you in something, I just assumed Pipe Dream was like some sort of like what am I trying to say?
Like a B2B like, SaaS revenue platform or something like that, right?
Yeah, or like it's like better. It's like a ClickFunnels kind of a thing or something like that. You know, like you could take people down the pipe. And then he's like, nah, bro, they're like building tunnels. And I was like,
yeah,
like real tunnels, like actual tunnels. That's correct. So like, where do we start? Where should we start?
Yeah, I can start. It's kind of from the top on like, why we're even going down this path. Like what even is the point of
why are you going down this tunnel? Got him.
Yeah. kind of the reason we even like started Pipe Dream wasn't because we wanted to put tunnels underground, right? The whole point was we saw this emerging category that we call hyperlogistics, which is the ability to deliver things within 30 seconds. And also giving all users on that logistics network the ability to upload or put things back into the logistics network in a frictionless way. So we kind of looked at like how the internet emerged and developed, and just saw the our logistics networks taking the same path, right? So where you have internet speeds that were really slow and no one really used it and you only used it for really important things. As those internet speeds got faster and faster, and as we got to megabit speeds, people were able to kind of offload the local storage on their computer and put that into the cloud and then tap into compute power greater than what they had just in their possession at the time and rent space on these really powerful machines. And just the economies and the things you're able to do when you reach those internet speeds are amazing. We never would have dreamed of it. And so we just see the same thing happening with logistics. As you get faster and faster and faster and faster, people are able to offload their local storage of things and access better quality things and more expensive things and rent them for a time and then put them back, so to speak, into the network. It just creates a more efficient system. And we just saw so many benefits to humanity and people and the environment that we decided, like, we should do everything we can to bring that type of logistics network to be this decade. So that's really where Pipe Dream started, was like, we just wanted to make that a reality in the 2020s. And we didn't really know where we were headed. And then eventually, as we started researching, like, what are people doing, you know, what's missing, it led us to, oh, we got to put tunnels underground.
Wow. What's crazy is yesterday we were just talking to one of the founders of Eco ATM, like that, like, you know, kiosk machine where you go kind of deposit your old phone, you get paid for it, and they refurbish it. And what's crazy to me is, I think, you know, just like you talked about, there's this whole different future of like distribution as a service, right? And like hyper logistics having such a significant play in it, which unlocks even more revenue opportunities. And at the same time, like, is friendlier towards the earth because more things are reusable, because, you know, the one most important commodity is preserved, which is our time. Mm-hmm. But super excited, extra and forever bullish on your company. And I'm just really pumped, man. This is super awesome.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And again, I look, while you were describing, I was looking you up on the website, on the web. And I went to the wrong Pipe Dream and it said something about APIs. And I was like, okay, so they're not building tunnels. And then I was like, I'm either the dumbest person ever or I'm on the wrong website. And so
you need to learn how to browse through the interwebs, bro. That's what we need to do.
I typed in Pipe Dream and I clicked on Pipe Dream. I don't know what you want me to say.
Yeah, that was the hardest pivot of all time.
Yeah. From tunnels to APIs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pipedreamlabs.co, your boy Garrett running this. So, I mean, like, where do you even start with this? So, like, if you're not only having to, like, have websites for this and raise funding, but then you also have to build physical, like, are you capitalizing on current tunnels that already exist, or do you have to actually build the tunnels and then add the technology too?
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of backed into this solution. And I think it gave us some benefit. There's always been this taboo around underground tunnels, because it's been tried so many times. In the 1880s, New York put in an entire underground logistics system, using pneumatic tubes. So they were using air pressure differences to, like, send things through the tubes, which is great. But when it fails, the whole network goes down. Once you lose air pressure anywhere, the whole thing goes down. So eventually they decided, we shouldn't do this anymore. Let's just use carton buggies to move stuff around. And so I think it kind of put this whole taboo on underground logistics systems for a while. But I think because we backed into it not knowing anything about underground logistics systems, and we're just like, okay, what available technologies do we have to, like, make this network exist? We took a different approach that hadn't been taken before. So instead of having costly tunnels that are really expensive using pneumatics or rails, where the infrastructure cost is really high and then your per unit cost is lower, we flipped that on its head and we looked like, what is the cheapest way that we can put in infrastructure to get the network off the ground and then scale up the network? Even though your per unit cost is going to be more expensive, it's a more efficient way to scale. So all the technology is in the pods themselves. So the pods themselves are little electric cars. They're like little electrical cylindrical cars that self-route through just a series of sewage pipe-like pipes. So the pipe is really cheap. There's a lot of people who put that kind of pipe in the ground. Fiber optics took a really similar approach to what we're taking. So the market for putting in that kind of pipe is kind of already exists. And then we're just putting in new pods that know how to self-route through that system. Right now, there's not a lot of unused pipe that we could take advantage of, or we don't know about it yet. So we are planning on putting it in ourselves. But the per linear foot cost is relatively really low.
Wow. I love it. I just thought of a new, I think if you guys, you know, blow up on TechCrunch, your article should be pipe down. There's a new competitor in town.
Boom. I just hate how good you are at these weird things.
Oh, that's kind of where the name came from, Pipe Dream, is like when we started working on this, we were like, oh man, someone's going to write an article about like how crazy this idea is. And they're going to say like, Garrett and Drew's Pipe Dream. And we're like,
I love that.
If we just make that the name and then they can't write that article?
Exactly. Yeah, and like anything they try to say in that like realm is like free PR.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I feel like, you know, in like a really like self-aware way, calling it Pipe Dream is like, yo, we get this is crazy. Like, we're really aware of that. So that's kind of where the name came from.
So like, what did you study in college? Did you study engineering? I'd love to hear like what some of that journey is and how you got into entrepreneurship. Because, you know, you're also like me, a young, technically a Zillennial founder, right?
I'm 90, born in 94.
Woo! Gang. But
you're there, man.
You're a millennial. You're not a Zillennial.
Yeah, I'm a millennial. Soak. Yeah. I'd love to hear about, you know, what kind of like were the influencing factors starting from college all the way to where you are today to kind of decide to go all in on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to school for mechanical engineering. I think like all the mechanical engineers my age, we all saw Iron Man and we're like, oh yeah, that, we should all be doing that.
Nice.
So I started mechanical engineering, honestly, just cause like my whole childhood, I just loved inventing things and building things, and finding new ways to sell what I build. But when I started going through mechanical engineering, I realized like, oh man, you know, a traditional mechanical engineering job isn't building things. It's more checking other people's work and making sure that it's safe. So I realized really quickly, this isn't going to be for me. So about 2 years into my college degree, I kind of just started supplementing, I know I don't want to be a mechanical engineer, but I still want to build things and sell them. Like, what is that called? And I just honestly hadn't ever been exposed to startups or entrepreneurship as really an option. So as I kind of took those 2 years, like in college, just like looking at like, okay, should I go business? I really started to understand like, oh, there's this whole startup ecosystem that, you know, has existed, but is still growing. And what a fortunate time to be starting my career that this thing exists. So I realized in college, like, oh, I want to go this route. So out of college, I said, I'm not going to take an engineering job. I'm just going to, you know, kind of jump off the cliff and figure it out. And I'm going to go build a startup. So I built my first startup out of college just like a little almost side project like startup. As I was doing that, I took a consulting role to pay for it because I didn't really know about funding. So I took a consulting role at a prosthetic startup doing R&D at the same time. So I was part-time and part-time. And so for 2 years, I worked on that and some other side projects and then was running R&D at this prosthetic startup. And then, so those 2 years and then about 2 years, the prosthetic startup pivoted from products to services. So we had this great product, but we weren't able to sell it enough. So we pivoted and instead of selling that product to other doctors, we used that product as a moat around our own clinical network and sold it just through our own clinics. So when we made that pivot, I decided to come on full time at the prosthetic startup running business development. And just kind of gave myself like, okay, I'm going to do this full time for a year and a half to 2 years. And when I leave the prosthetic startup, I want to be taking my big moonshot. I'm still pretty young. I have one big shot in me. And so I was going to use that 2 years just to do real hardcore research. And then once I left, jump into that moonshot project. And then that's where Pipe Dream came from.
That's amazing, you know, because I think a lot of times with like the whole hustle porn energy that's going around, you know, they're like, quit your job, live in your mom's basement. It's like, starting a company is hard. And, you know, I think if you have a full-time job that helps you pay the bills and gives you a little bit of cushion that you can save up while still investing like nights and weekends into building out your company, like that is a totally viable option and sometimes probably the best because you don't take that kind of financial risk, you know? So,
dude, yeah. Keep your job and live in your mom's basement. save that money, dude, while you're making it. That's all I'm saying.
Send it to the dev teams in Ukraine.
That's right. Dev teams in Ukraine, living in OKC now. Let's go. Shop at Costco. You can make it. You can make your dreams happen. So one thing I want to ask is, so going back to the actual pipes themselves, like how big of, well, at least starting off, like how big of items are you going to be sending? Like, you know, like little trinkets and shit or like groceries or like what can you send?
Yeah, absolutely. So our initial focus is going to be grocery and food delivery. So we're really looking at that 1 foot pipe range.
That's going to be dope. Anyway, are you guys like in your pitch decks and shit, are you guys having like partnerships with, you know, Uber Eats and that kind of stuff? Or would you kind of like create your own version of Uber Eats?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually want to supercharge the existing networks. So honestly, like our full goal is just like the internet, we want an input and an output from every home and business in the US. But until then, we're creating a backbone infrastructure for supercharging the current inner city delivery networks.
That's so cool.
So kind of think of it as almost like a subway system for things where,
ooh, you know, that should be your slogan, dude. That's really cool.
Thank you. I like that. So just kind of like you have all these neighborhoods and regions and parts in the city where Uber Eats or I talked to someone from Amazon Scout this morning, Starship, these drone delivery services. Instead of taking them from point A to point B, they would take it from point A to the closest node on our like that subway system. We call it the loop. So you take it to the nearest node on the loop. It goes 200 miles an hour from that node to the node closest to the delivery point, where a drone, a robot, or a driver picks it up from there and finishes it. So you look
at this future.
Yeah. It's going to decrease, it's going to increase, your food delivery times, by 2x to 4x, depending on where you live. But what it's also going to do is it's also going to dramatically drop the cost to the food delivery companies. You look at the costs on food delivery right now, it's adding 30 to 45% total cost to food delivery. Because you have a human being in a 2-ton car driving to the restaurant, picking up your 6-pack of chicken nuggets, and then driving all the way to your house, you know, probably in the suburbs, and then driving all the way back to the city center where the restaurants are at. That's bananas. And it's expensive, and it's adding, you know, 30, 40% to food delivery. You know, using the loop, there's a dramatic cost reduction.
No, I love it. This is genius, man. I can see that. So, and would it be a thing where it's like, eventually you want it to be like, shoop, 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 and you're just like sending stuff out all over the place and it goes up. Also, there's like four questions in this. So when it gets to the local, like, so let's say that it gets to, is there going to be like a hub, kind of like a bus station, or is it going to be like each street's going to have their own little pop-up, kind of like their own little personal mailbox, if you will?
Yeah. So it probably just depends on volume. In that location, if there's a already established drone and robot delivery network, we probably need a bigger, more of an established place to be facilitating those handoffs. But if there's less volume, it doesn't need to be very big.
Ooh, and this is kind of like an above ground competitor to drones, huh?
Not really. I wouldn't think so. I think
it's like more complementary,
possible. Yeah. So drones have a real, there's a few issues with drones, but one of their big ones right now is range. So, you know, Walmart just launched their drone program. They only get a 3-mile circumference around Walmart.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is that like, it's a better option. Like, it's a much more obvious, more systematic, more like easier to use. There, it's you know, like, I feel like it's more established system, but I feel like it will compete with the idea of what companies want drones to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it passes it up by far. Like, I think it's a way better option, but I think, like, when I think of the future of drones in like a scary way, it's like, there's just drones everywhere. They're dropping shit off on every single house every 20 minutes. And so in that reality, I think this is a competitor of that. But obviously a far superior product, but just kind of like in a similar sense though.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think drones have a really good place, in logistics, and I think they're so cool. Like, we love drones. Me and my co-founder have always been super obsessed with them. But, you know, in the future of hyper logistics, you know, we're estimating that you'd use the system 15 to 30 times a day. That's a lot of drones per person in a city, and they're not quiet. So we don't see drones being the full answer to logistics, but they definitely have, you know, their place.
Yeah, and I guess this is a really good segue, but, you know, one of the biggest challenges like drone technology companies face for the most part is FAA regulations and being compliant, and then, you know, private property laws and flying over and everything. Similarly, how has kind of, you know, one, in anticipation of your pilot, and two, moving on forward from there, navigating through the kind of regulatory framework and, you know, being compliant and still being able to, you know, have large scale partnerships and make experiments happen been?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real, real estate laws are a little tricky and a little gray, especially depending on the city that you're in. So our first advisor was actually a landman. We brought him on really early to help us navigate. Like,
what is a landman?
Yeah, so a landman.
You said that like we knew what that was. Like, classic landman, dude.
Yeah, freaking landman, dude.
Am I a landman?
No, I'm not really genuinely curious.
I'm more of a seaman, if you will.
God. Okay. Yeah, Garrett, you were saying?
Yeah. So a landman, they're in oil and gas. So when you need to buy pipeline rights, right of ways through people's land, you hire a landman to help like navigate that. So they purchase land below ground, basically.
Are they the same people who do like mineral rights purchasing too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
got it. Yeah, so they're just like real estate brokers under the ground.
Awesome. Stupid name.
Yeah,
I love that name.
But there are some really interesting ways that we'll be able to take advantage of existing easements that utility companies already own in cities, and lease that from the utility companies themselves, which makes it a single customer real estate purchase.
Wow. And you already pretty much have distribution built out.
Yeah, exactly. Because they already have those networks
are already
built into a city.
Wait, so is there anyone else doing this? Is there like, oh my God, geez. Is there anyone else doing this? Is there like competition right now? Is there like kind of a secondary competitor in a way? Or like, where are you guys at with that?
Yeah. So there is an Amazon patent. But especially talking to the people at Amazon this morning, they're definitely not pursuing it. Amazon has some crazy patents, but they do have an underground logistics patent. It's using conveyor belts, which I'm
conveyor
not.
Conveyor belts underground? Yeah. What is this, the Jetsons?
Yeah, so their idea was like, we put boxes on conveyor belts underground, and then they just like an extension of the distribution center. They just keep going down to conveyor belts all the way to your house. So we don't really see Amazon right now as a competitor. There is another company called Magway in the UK that's doing underground logistics for in between distribution centers. So they would be more like the 18 wheelers.
So third party logistics kind of centers, like they would do the delivery to and fro.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we would do inter-region delivery. So we'd be more like the delivery trucks. Honestly, right now, the space is so new and developing, we see them as collaborators, more than competitors.
And that's awesome. Cool. Are you all like pretty extensive about like filing patents and preserving intellectual property on like all different aspects of, you know, the hardware, like the hardware tech itself, and your systems?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't let filing for IP get in the way of creating.
I love that.
So we don't file probably as much as a typical company would. But we do, we do file here and there.
Awesome.
For different iterations.
And this is kind of on topic, but you know, how do you feel about the sport of pickleball? It's kind of I don't see why you're laughing. Like, you know, it's a serious sport.
Yeah. I actually, just met a really handsome man, who recently introduced me to pickleball.
Ooh, nice.
Pickleball Jesus, if you will. So I'm actually converting to the religion of pickleball, but I'd like to keep religion out of this podcast if possible.
Okay.
Well, you brought it in and took it out. So
I will have to say that Joey Pickleball, if you're listening to this, thank you for following me on Twitter. I appreciate your love at every pickleball-related post that I post. And
to clarify to all of our...
Yeah, we can hang out in Florida, man. But...
Yeah,
to clarify.
Ooh,
we just started a pickleball league in Oklahoma City for startup founders and others. So
yeah,
if you want to join,
socially distant, CDC compliant, you know, we kicking it to COVID with paddle. But
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
So talking about Twitter, you know, one thing that I really appreciate is like there's of course this like low key like budding startup ecosystem with a lot of awesome people who are coming in, you know, to OKC, but also. Like, we're really going all out on Twitter. We're building our brands. And, you know, I saw, and when was it that you realized that Twitter could be such a powerful amplifier to your voice, Garrett?
All right, Farhaj, this is going to sound, because you were on this podcast, but I would say this on another podcast that you weren't on.
Okay.
It really looking at the way you're using Twitter.
Thanks, man.
Was like, oh my gosh, like what a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have a chance to like scream in downtown San Francisco every day. And Twitter gives you that opportunity.
Dude, you and your way with your little words, dude. That's another like really good expression, dude. It's like you can scream in downtown San. I'd be like, it's like a cool way to talk online.
No, I mean he's definitely right though. The serendipity is crazy, and just like you know, the degrees of separation that you have with the people that you absolutely want to talk to is wild.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're buddies with like Ara and KP, the guys at Yak, and like it's so cool just like having a digital community, but like actually putting a face behind the name and how like just, you know, talking on Twitter can help you network into some pretty like gatekeeped communities.
Yeah. And I think like something that I learned from you was it seems really the barrier to entry into that network seems really big and almost like you need to know someone in that network to get access to it. And just like, honestly, you don't. Like if you start tweeting, and kind of the analogy like screaming in Center Square downtown San Francisco, like there's a chance someone really influential is going to walk by and hear what you're saying. So it's really all about just like start tweeting, start screaming in that square, you know, start replying to people you find interesting. It doesn't take long before you're in the thick of it. It's really cool.
No, absolutely. And one thing I wanted to ask was about your timeline. So like, how long have you guys been working on this? And then how far until, or how long until you think you're going to be like, you know, out the gate, like starting to ship some products?
Yeah. So I'd say we've been serious at it for maybe 4 months now. That's when we really, you know, we had all our research done and we're like, all right, we're committing to some serious engineering now. We've been through a few iterations, and then last weekend we put in the test track, our testing, and then into September we'll have the first pods going through the test track.
I'm so excited.
That's real quick. Question, could it fit a grown man in the tube?
Corey, are you offering? Because that would be
asking
amazing.
For a friend.
Yeah, I'm not grown man. If someone wants to offer their baby, I bet we could make it happen.
Okay, I offer Farhaj. I wouldn't consider him grown. He still lives millennial. So
that is fair.
And that's very fair. And so in regards to funding, like, so, you know, you've only been around 4 months. Obviously you guys have experience like in the startup world. Have you guys seeked funding yet? Did you just have like fat pockets and you're just throwing money out there? Like, where are you guys at as far as like fundraising goes?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we started 4 months ago, we just wanted, like, we just really have a real bias for action. So like, we just want to get out there. We want to get started. We want to start building things. And also we wanted to eliminate a lot of the execution risks that we had for ourselves. Because we could totally just go build like a SaaS company and work on that. And not that it'd be easy, but we'd love doing that too. So if we're going to do a real hardware moonshot, we wanted to at least make sure the math checked out before we took any money. And so kind of the last 4 months has been, you know, taking our biggest risks and eliminating them. So we're not taking money right now. We're still kind of in that process, but maybe soon.
There we go. And anyone listening that wants to write a check, put your wallets away. You got to wait. We're going to figure this out. Boom.
So how do you actually, you know, talking about the fundraising vein, go about evaluating your total addressable market opportunity, or talking about some of the more, you know, nuanced things that surround the longevity of your startup? You know, I'm really curious for, yeah, you know, what you're
something that's been really interesting on Twitter has been how many VCs and angels, yeah, have wanted to fund an underground logistics company, huh, and just never found one. So like, we're not fundraising right now, but we're totally taking inbound, and yeah, we've met some really interesting people who have always wanted to do this. So there was no convincing. There was no like helping them understand the total addressable market. They saw it as inevitable technology that no one was pursuing. So that's been really cool. But like for people who aren't already there, kind of what we show is, look, there's a real business case for this.
Yeah.
Even not at full scale, just supercharging existing delivery networks. So you see all the money raised by Starship and these drone, yeah, companies, and all the money going into kind of, we call it last quarter mile logistics. Just we will be able to make that world feasible and let them capitalize on their vision of you know, last quarter mile delivery. So in that in of itself is a good, you know, $1 billion business. Yeah, our future goal, the total addressable market is massive, like getting an input and output into every home. Not to be one of those people who's like, oh, there's a $100 billion total addressable market, everyone is addressable.
I was just talking to Brad about it the other day in Vue. You know, it's like, all I want is one of those Jetson pipes in my home, and I can push three buttons on Uber Eats, and then boom, like my chicken shawarma Lebanese style with the garlic dip and the hummus is on my table,
you know.
That's it.
No offense to ruin the vibe, but I'd rather have one of those Spy Kids things where you can just make it in the microwave and it appears.
Oh yeah, low-key, that would be way better.
Total vibe ruiner, Corey.
I'm not investing in Garrett's company. I'm investing in whoever makes that.
The microwave food machine.
Yeah, just saying. No offense, man. No offense.
None taken. I would also quit and work for that company.
Okay, well, let's all work on it. I love it.
That's interesting, though. Actually, sorry to cut you off again, Corey. But Garrett, talking about hiring, you know, what has the makeup of your early team?
You're going to go off. You're going to. That's interesting. And then talk about the microwave.
Oh no, no, no.
I was like, where are you going with this?
No, but like, yeah, what's like the makeup of your team been? You know, what are your goals for scaling that team upwards? Are you looking for people who are like, you know, doctorate level students with, you know, a lot of academic background, or you're just looking for, you know, rebels who have really strong chops on the technical side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of right now, like what we're looking for is just those Swiss Army knife engineers, people who, they're really smart and they have experience, but they're really flexible and they don't have a really rigid paradigm of, you know, what the possibilities are. So when we say, our initial timeline was we wanted to have this done by October, and the team was like, ooh, that's going to be really hard. you know, end of October, that's really pushing it.
Said every team ever.
Yeah. But then they figured it out and they got it. They got all the engineering done by early September, 2 months ahead of schedule. And just a credit to the team, like we have a really amazing team of engineers who are really creative and resourceful and work really hard. I'm just really proud to work with them. But that's really the kind of the team that we're looking to build going forward, especially for the first couple of years. And until we have a lot of this figured out, and then we'll hire the more of the technical specialists, the kitchen knives, if you will. But yeah, just anyone who's interested in really hard problems, those are the type of people that we're bringing on.
And then you're currently in OKC along with Farhaj and I. Can you kind of describe like why you like being, or if you don't, why you're in Oklahoma City and like how you feel about the startup environment here?
You know, honestly, I did not like the startup environment, especially 4 years ago. It was non-existent. So my plan was to finish out, you know, my 2 years, kind of getting I called it my MBA experience at Marlin Bionics, running the business side, and then leave for San Francisco. But in those 2 years, you know, and to Farhaj's credit, the team at Thunder Launchpad and Erica and Chris, they've really created a really interesting group of entrepreneurs who are hungry and community driven. That has made the Oklahoma City ecosystem pretty interesting. That coupled with how cheap it is to live here, and this emerging idea of, you know, the new Silicon Valley being in the cloud, where you have access to it wherever you're at, it's made Oklahoma City kind of seem like it could be a more long-term option. I think it's really cool. Like whenever we hop on a Zoom call with investors, no one knows where you're at, and everyone just kind of assumes you're in San Francisco.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Like when you say Oklahoma City, they're like, Oklahoma City. Like, yeah, what are you doing there?
Down on the way to the coast. Like, what's going on? You need help?
Yeah, I'm really excited for things to wind down, you know, with respect to COVID, when that happens and the world opens up. I think we can have a lot of really fun events and have more people come here from the VC landscape to potential LPs who are looking at new emerging funds that are having like Midwest and South focused theses. And yeah, I think there's a lot of fun to be had and a lot of people to be helped that way. So it'll be cool.
Sometimes when Farhaj talks, I'm like, is he going to breathe? It's like, I'm like looking at my watch, like, dude, this guy's been talking for like 20 seconds. And
yeah, somebody said like, I speak at like 1.75x playback speed, like on a podcast.
Literally. Yeah. I'm like, well, it's not even the speed. It's the like lack of breaths you take mid sentence. I'm just like, dude, I need to breathe. Just watching, like listening to
That's what happens when you have conviction in your paragraph or your statement. Oh, bro. Facts.
Oh, yeah, this guy's a professional athlete of talking, man.
You and your words, man. I don't know how you do this. I'm a pun guy.
I'm like, a word man.
Yeah. I'm more of a land man, if you will. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
This is cool, man. I mean, do you have anything else you want to talk about with your company, or if not, we can kind of do our, you know, the closing ceremonies, and I'll have Farhaj take over. But yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about?
If you don't mind me plugging real quick.
Let's go.
Wait, plug hour.
So if you're interested in what we're building and what we're doing, just go to pipedreamlabs.co/apply. I'd love to talk to you. And we have some a lot of wide ranging positions open. And if you're interested in building the future and you have hustle, I'm sure we have something for you.
Love. So now for the closing ceremonies, Garrett, drop your handle, drop your at, tell us the people where we can find you.
Yeah. So I'm at the Garrett Scott at Twitter.
Boom. At Twitter. That's love it.
I love that. You know, I was actually peeping your like Twitter profile yesterday, and I saw you change your location to underground. I was like, yo, that's hard, bro.
Underground brand, if you will.
Yeah, I love like the little the hole too that you have right next to your name in terms of emoji.
That's a Alex Edelman from Try Lolly.
His play, because he has the lollipop.
Yeah. I he helped us out on that, so
that's cool, man. Yeah, we were having a chat about all this stuff on Clubhouse. If you have Clubhouse, Thursdays at some time, I forget, it's like 8 p.m. or something. The boys and the gals just hop on and chat about stuff like this. But yeah, super excited you were able to hop on the pod. You know, I let Corey chime in, but this was an absolute pleasure, Garrett.
They call me Closey Corey for a reason. Garrett, it was a pleasure. Yeah, Garrett, it was a pleasure, man. We'll see you at Pickleball tonight, and best of luck building the future.
Sounds good. Hey, guys, I honestly, I do love the podcast, so it was a blast being on. Most business podcasts do not have the vibes and the energy this one does. It always gets me so hype, so keep it up. I love it.
Hell yeah. Boom.
Thanks, everyone, so much for tuning in to the Building Fires podcast.
Yeah, man. We're planning on dropping episodes every Monday, talking to some amazing guests and giving you the content you deserve.
Boom. Farhaj and I are so grateful for you guys. I can edit this.
I know.
Farhaj and I are so grateful for all of your support. If you can, please leave 5 stars and a review on your podcast app, whichever one you use. Farhaj and I would definitely appreciate it. I'm trying to get our little podcast SEO up.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, looking forward to seeing you next week, and we're excited to make looking forward to seeing you next week. We got some exciting guests for you.
Boom.
Guests for you. Guests for you.
You scurvy curs.
Boom. Arr. Boom.